Honorable members, let's welcome the department delegation led by Mr. Smallbeggar, the DG has sent an apology which we accept, and we are happy that he has built a very good team, so even if he's not there, we have no doubt that the right thing will be done under the leadership of that Smallbeggar. We are adding one more item. After at 10:30, the first will be DSC briefing on parole administration, and then number two will be NCCS report. I am going to ask the Ms. Majake to chair whilst I do something, and then I'll come back.
And the representative of the department. In terms of the agenda, we will now be busy with the DCS performance in the first quarter of 2016-2017 financial year. May I hand over to you, that is Smallbeggar.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. Chairperson, in terms of the first part of the presentation, let me just before thank you for accepting the apology of the National Commissioner, Mr. Lubitschek. We appreciate that you accept this apology and that we can continue. Chairperson, in terms of the first quarter review, we don't know, this was circulated some time ago, so I don't know whether we need to go into detail or we can just give a snapshot summary. If you need just an overview, we'll ask Mr. Katenga to do the first part of the performance information, and then subsequently we will continue with the CFO to just give us an overview on the financial state. Thank you, Chairperson.
What's the feeling of the members? Snapshot is okay. Okay, great.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chair members and colleagues present. I'll be taking the meeting through the summary of the performance information for quarter one. That is, the detail is captured on slides 1 to 48 of the PowerPoint presentation. And we also circulated a Word document which was a narrative on that performance information as well. So I would like to take us to slide 5, which is a summary of the overall department's performance. So out of a total of 33 targets for quarter one, 23 have been achieved, 10 not achieved, and 7 we are just monitoring progress, but are actually measured on an annual basis. This represents an achievement rate of 70% of the total targets for the year 2016-17. Without going through the detail, I'll just give the highlights to a program in terms of the achievements and the non-achievements and progress towards the targets that are achieved annually or measured annually. Under program one of the key areas to note was the percentage of finalized legal cases successfully defended, where we had a target of 76%, but we actually achieved 91%. So 11 of the 12 cases that were finalized, we did achieve success in 11 of them. If we go to slide 11, under GITO, the rollout of the integrated inmate management system for quarter one, the target was to build and test completion of the inmate registration and admission processes. That has been completed. And I believe that will also be demonstrated to the committee members on their oversight visits later on in the year. Would also just like to indicate in terms of the judicial inspectorate, which is slide 12, that of their scheduled 20 inspections for the first quarter, they did manage to achieve those. On the targets that are measured on an annual basis, I think the key one to just flag there, which is on slide 17, is the percentage of funded posts filled per financial year. We're targeting 92% today. As it stands, as at the end of quarter one, we were on 91%. But then that is an ongoing process, which will be corrected in the subsequent quarters. In the areas where there are challenges, we are looking at the rollout of the percentage of correctional facilities where the local area network infrastructure is rolled out. The issue there being that subsequent to the commencing the financial year, the indications are that the budgets had to be shifted and therefore the targets had to be reduced considerably. So whilst we initially targeted 180 centres, we've had to reduce that to 27 for this current financial year. And of those 27, we have completed 30 in the first quarter. One of the other targets was also to automate the performance indicators of the annual performance plan. The target for the first quarter was to automate the indicator on the measurement of the budget spent. There was just an administrative glitch on that, in that there's still some alignment to be done in terms of getting the best layout between National Treasury and ourselves. But that is something that is being worked on will be worked on in the second quarter. If I move on to program two, which would be slide 22, I think what would be important to note today is that for the first quarter, the percentage of unnatural deaths, we did perform above the target there, in that the target was 13, and we actually were in line with that, so we did not underachieve there. And that would be due to the regions implementing the various strategies in terms of identifying the suicide risk and so forth. I think that is the main key achievement there. If we move on to slide 28, which is the percentage of bed space created through the construction of new facilities and the upgrading of existing facilities. You'll see that the target is 435 for the new, and for upgrading it's 925. In terms of progress of the new facilities, there was a delay there due to prior insolvencies, but in the advent of the commencement of the current financial year, Public Works has advertised the bids and they are in the process of receiving inputs and will be adjudicating that. With regards to the upgrading of bed spaces, For CMAX, which is envisaged as 12 bed spaces on completion, that is in progress. Raubex are actually on site and work commenced in May. The other two centers are in escort, which will be representative of 309 bed spaces at a standard of 604. And work in those areas is also underway and envisaged to be on target as well. I think the challenges under incarceration would be the issues of escapes, assaults, and overcrowding, where we have performed below target. But with regards to overcrowding, we have the multi-pronged strategy that continues to be rolled out that addresses the various facets. And the detail of that is on page 14 of the Word document that circulated, which was the narrative report. If I may move to program 3, which is rehabilitation. I think we have seen success in terms of the execution of all correctional programs, skills development, as well as other correctional programs such as social work and spiritual services. The only one that we measure on an annual basis is the grade 12 pass rate, which we will only be able to report on in quarter 4 because the result of that comes out in December. Under program 4, all the indicators there, we have registered successes. That is on the percentage of inmates on antiretroviral treatment, percentage of inmates tested for HIV, and TB cure rates, and therapeutic diets. And then under program 5, which is we look at the indicators that are in the MTSF around the parolees and probationers not violating their conditions, and also the number of service points established under community corrections, which also have an impact on each other. One of the major challenges there on electronic monitoring, being that there are some of the equipment that is in a state that requires repair, but that has been that equipment has been ordered for such rectification, and the improvement will be noted in the second quarter of 2016-17. I think, Chair, with regards to the performance information, that would be my input.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can we open for questions and comments from members?
I'm going to take the word of course.
Including parole?
I mean the finance.
Okay. You can continue.
Thank you, Jefferson. My presentation starts from slide 49, and I'll just use the highlights. We'll start on slide 50, where I'm just indicating to the committee the cuts that we were affected in this financial year, which we presented earlier on in the year. There was a cut on the entire budget of 281 million in this current financial year, of which 143 million was on the compensation of employees' budget, as well as 137 million on broken down as indicated on slide 50. On slide 51, which obviously led to our budget being reduced to 21.5 million. On slide 21, we indicate which programs were affected, which is administration, incarceration, rehabilitation, and care. Of which it's presented there in terms of what makes up, what is the specific amount reduced for each program amounting to 281 million. And on slide 52, we indicate from an economic classification point of view that 143 million on compensation to employees and 137 million on goods and services. If we move on to slide 53, we are indicating how we have performed in terms of financial expenditure. We spent, at the end of June, we have spent 24.64% of the budget, which is 5.3 billion, leaving 16.2 billion available for the rest of the 3 quarters of the year. If we move to slide 55, you'll see that except for the program CARE, all programs have spent beyond or above the spending plan, and I will indicate as we go along that constitutes 175 million for the first quarter, where by how much we've exceeded the spending plan. On slide 57, we're just indicating now per program what are the contributing factors for each program. In relation to program one, the main, on slide 56, the main contributor of exceeding the spending plan in the first quarter, where we overspent by 32 million on goods and services, was mainly on as a result of fleet services due to high kilometer expenditure on as well as claims, vehicle repairs and consumable supplies and operating leases. On program 2, on slide 59, the biggest contributor there on overspending, where the sub-program exceeded its spending plan by 97 million, was as a result of 99 million of expenditure on goods and services. If we move on to slide 60, we indicate why the overspending on goods and services, which was mainly on municipal services relating to the previous financial year, which could not have been honored, and those invoices of 193 million were then paid in the current financial year. Moving on to slide 62 on program 3, we have where the program has overspent by 20 million, and the biggest contributor there was compensation of employees as a result of performance bonuses relating to the 14-15 financial year, which was effected in the current financial year. Program 4, which is CARE, there wasn't underspending on that program, but the only overspending on compensation was as a result of also again performance bonuses related to the previous financial year. Program 5 overspent by 31 million during the first quarter. And the biggest contributor was both compensation of employees and goods and services. And on goods and services, if you look at slide 67, was mainly relating to operating leases relating to the previous financial year, which we paid in the current financial year. Slide 68 just gives, in terms of economic classification, where are the pressure points. And on the sixth column, you will see on compensation of employees, we are at 15 million, exceeding the spending plan. Goods and services is at 122 million, and this is mainly attributed to fleet as well as municipal services. Lastly, I just want to indicate to the committee that in terms of cost containment, we have seen, as management, we have started on cost containment. We have presented on slide 72 the cost containment, but having looked at also in quarter 2, we have implemented other drastic measures in relation to containing costs in the current financial year. Firstly, we have set up a task team that will be looking at efficiency of operations, and this committee has already indicated to management that certain things that already been implemented in terms of the financial structure that be implemented. Firstly, in the first step, we said we will install video conferencing. That has since been done, so that we reduce obviously travel and accommodation expenditure, and also productivity of employees to reduce traveling. And meetings between head office and regions and management areas are now being held through a video conferencing where we can avoid unnecessary traveling. We've also reduced consultancy fees. That is also evident in terms of the movement between 13-14 and 14-15, where we reduced consultancy by 43 million to 29 million, and those contracts remain not being utilized. As in, we are maintaining that position as we speak. In relation to events, we've also cut down on events for both offenders so that we reduce expenditure in that regard. Beginning November, we've also put a cap on kilometers for officials on a monthly basis. There are certain thresholds that we cannot exceed so that we reduce expenditure and speed. And that is also supported by the fact that the use of connectivity between offices will lead to that cut as well. Given the cuts that were also been indicated on the MTBBS, as a department, we've taken a decision on Monday that we need to freeze the filling of positions so that we review all contract positions. We review also and identify positions that are mission critical, so that we do not exceed obviously the ceiling that has been set by National Treasury. Lastly, I think that those are the main issues. But lastly, on support services, we are also tasked facilities and regions to ensure that we cut down on consumption of water and also electricity to ensure that we do not exceed on our food. Chairperson, I think those are the interventions that we've put in place, and that's the outcomes of the first quarter of the financial year.
Thank you very much, and the presentation is welcome. Your last comment about cutting down on electricity and water. Remember, we have actually indicated that you need to go and make an investigation of those big bills. Do you want to give us an idea as to what the outcome of the investigation is? Because your bills were just too big. And the comment that came out of the committee was, it's as if you're running a city. There could be something that is wrong. And then indication was made to the fact that you will go and just investigate this so that you could be in the position to give us some answers. What is good is to see how you are actually managing to reach your targets when it comes to fighting corruption. We must actually encourage you to continue to fight corruption, because this is what the committee would like to see movement around, because what you hear in the public discourse is that there is corruption all over. And where there is corruption, there must be action. We have enough institutions that are supposed to be dealing with corruption. So we're not just supposed to be hearing voices or noise that says there is corruption. We must see real human beings who are corrupt. And we must ask questions. If these are the human beings that we know are corrupt, why are they not apprehended? So I must actually say that in this regard, and it's a message that we are actually sending throughout all the departments, to say that we need to start seeing human beings that are alleged to be corrupt. And I'm sure what I'm talking about, all of you are quite fully aware of, that whatever you hear corruption. But then we have to start making that corruption that is actually being harmed to be something that is real so that we can all look at it in its eyes and say, corruption, we're going to fight you. Well done in this regard. I can see that you have actually also improved on a natural death, which is good progress, and I think we need to actually comment on it. I'm worried about remand detainees and overcrowding. You're indicating that you've made progress, but that progress is not too too much. And I think it's an area that needs to be worked on continuously with the JCTS cluster in order for us to be in the position to cut down on remand detainees because of the fact that it becomes also costly for us to be having such a huge population of remand detainees that the country is supposed to actually maintain. Your target on introduction of correctional programs. It says percentage on sentence inmates subjected to correctional program. You have a target of 72%. You have already done 18. So that 18 means it's 100% for the quota. If you look at, am I right? Please just correct it for me. I think it's on. Oh, I didn't write the slide number. The percentage of sentence inmates subjected to correctional program. It says 18. I quickly made the calculation to say if you've got four quarters, then it means if per quarter is 18, for all, the four quarters is 72%. Help me to understand it. Did you find it? Okay. Does it mean that for the first quarter, you've done 100%?
Chairperson, thank you.
Yes.
Basically, what you'll see, the annual target is 72.
Yes.
Now, to break the 72 into the four quarters, you will divide it by four.
It's 18 per quarter.
And then it gives you 18.
Mm-hmm.
And the performance for the first quarter was 19.06%, meaning that we exceeded the target of 18%.
Mm-hmm.
By 1%, meaning that if you then have cumulative, if you look cumulative at that, you will then reach your target at the end of the financial year.
Okay. Thank you very much. You actually have a lot of overspending on performance bonuses and compensation of employees, but you are actually referring this to the previous year. Did you budget for it in the previous year? Why does it actually have to be reflected in the current spending? I'm opening up for members. I'll recognize Honorable Horn, Honorable Bongo, Honorable Breitenbach, Honorable Mutapu, in that order.
Thank you, first of all, I would like to talk to slide 28, and then link to that the previous slides, 25 and 26, which deal with the overcrowding and the escapes and the injuries. And then coming to 28, it's this old issue of the additional bed spaces, which would obviously help address the overcrowding to an extent. And we sit with this, and we have dealt with this when we dealt with the annual report as well, with this thing that for whatever reason, for the past few years, no additional bed spaces have been created. So I would just like to, first of all, request an update as to how we are doing with this annual target, because I think we agreed during our deliberations on the annual report that despite the fact that this is an annual target, specifically due to the huge underperformance in the previous years, we need regular updates. So if we can get some feedback as to what the progress is there. Then, Madam Acting Chair, on page 35, Yeah, no, what I wanted to say on page 35 is there where it says reasons for underachievement, it says correct method of calculation was not accurate. So that once again brings us back to one of the recurring themes also when we deal with the AG reports on this department, namely the fact that due to the manual system that's been used to collate data, ultimately the performance indicators are not of much use. So, yeah, I don't know. This keeps coming back, so maybe we must just keep on saying this will not resolve itself. The department must implement measures and tell us how they will address this. Then, I'm acting chair on page 47 in respect of the so-called electronic tagging. They once again, if we look at the reasons for underachievement, this unfortunately doesn't paint a very positive picture. Electronic tagging had been announced and touted as a possible solution, partial solution also to overcrowding, but now we've seen that more and more of these electronic tags fall into a state of disrepair, which then leads to the question as to how regularly are these parolees monitored physically. Then it is said here that faulty devices sent for repairs were not received from the service provider. That in itself is a wholly unsatisfactory explanation. Surely there must be a service level agreement with the service provider, so to just inform us that they not received back doesn't help this committee. And then, once again, maybe the question must be asked as to what is the way forward for electronic tagging. We know there's been also contractual issues, so if we can get some feedback as to whether we must deem this as a modern, progressive solution or part of the solution to overcrowding, or whether we must just say this is a pilot project that has flopped and we must stop this. And then, Madam Acting Chair, yes, you have asked a question regarding the performance bonuses and whether it was budgeted for. I always have this uneasy feeling if bonuses are paid whilst a department or an entity sits with a fairly high vacancy rate. Specifically if, as it seems to me, and we will get the confirmation on the basis of your question, if there was no budgetary provision for these bonuses. So I think in addition to your question, I think the question once again must be repeated as to what is the progress with the filling of funded vacancies and ultimately the impact on the service delivery on the one hand by DCS and on the other hand the fact that this hamstringing the implementation of a a proper the Honourable Breitenbach is not helpful, Chair.
Why do you make her laugh so much?
No, she is laughing at my English, which is really, I think, a hate crime. but it's impacting negatively also on the implementation of a better shift system. Mm. So we need an explanation as to, or a detail as to what.
You have to rescue Honourable Breitenbach. Look how they
feel
now.
Yes. Thank you, Madam. I can say that those are my
Okay. Honorable Bongo.
Yeah, thanks. I think I have read the first quarter report. It looks very promising, Chair. I should say this, that the development has improved quite a lot. And I think as the committee need to appreciate the improvement on the department side. I think I've had the department quite correct, unlike Honorable Noah. I don't vacate, they are still investigating a way of getting back to check whether candidates delete that in terms of the austerity measures that we had requested them to deal with, because the budget has decreased. I think my one question would be around the issue of Program 3, rehabilitation, on the rentals and the hiring. Because it indicated there that it shows the variance of plus 462.5% between the planned and the expired as it stands. So I want to check what is the extent to which they planned to avoid such a huge variance in terms of the planned expenditure and the real actual expenditure. I think Alan, that a lot of other questions, but I need to ask the committee to correct at max point to elect a new chairperson of the contract.
Yeah, it is his.
Generally, I'm very happy with the development of the development in terms of the first quarter expenditure.
Thank you, Honorable Bongo, for your assistance. Honorable Breitenbach.
Mm-hmm. Oh, trauma.
Mm-hmm.
The one portion of our question relates to the discussion of the overcrowding issue. I'm not sure I understand how you can set a target for overcrowding if it doesn't depend upon you. Because you get inmates to leave with both of them or not. So I just like to understand how you actually get to a target for overcrowding when you have absolutely no control. I mean, I think coming in. And secondly, the second question relates to nothing at all. I think in your presentation, I didn't see anything about it. But I would like to know how many, and you don't have to tell me now, you can let me know, how many people are in prison who have bail checks for them
in the amount of thousand rand or under. Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach. Honorable Mutapo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by commending the department. Now we can see there is improvement. And generally, the over expenditure is more by less than 700,000 of 0.8%. That's really commendable. Keep it up. And generally, over expenditure in most programs and that case, maybe the real response is not very much on care to say which programs were affected by the under expenditure. And again, Chairperson, when the CSO was making his presentation, I was prepared by the austerity measures which we have put in place, especially in terms of cutting on capacities and then on traveling by holding of video conferencing. That's really commendable. And what I would like to have clarity on, remember, during our consultation interaction with the department, the issue of Operation Zero and Lela Ship Program in Bulawayo, LMM region, you promised to to come back to us regarding the allegations of corruption in terms of trials. But up to now, we haven't received anything in the committee. And so today, I was asking the parliament. And on transfers, which are transfers and subsidies, that each balance of plus 859.4%. May you explain to the committee on this actual And then, very quick question, my colleagues are able to address the issue of assessment. I'm aware you, in your documents, you have mentioned that there are some officials who are resigning, which also might have a negative impact on this vacancy rate. But I'm a bit concerned because, you know, we have a, especially on care programs, very critical rescues. We, now and then, when you are here before this committee, we make mention of issue of psychology, medical professionals, social workers, and so on. So, and I'm a bit concerned because it has said the vacancy rate is higher than the set norm by the GCSA, Public Sanitation Administration. So, what plan are you having to ensure the high vacancy rate? And the HR positions, which we still provide for the community. Also, updated on ask the regional commissioners of housing and LMN. How far are you within mobile station? Thank you, Chair President.
Thank you, Honorable Mutapa. I'm sure you can hear that there continues to be accolades. All in all, we still continue to appreciate the fact that the department is really doing well. Just the idea that you now have managed to get an unqualified audit report after 22 years says something about the people that are working now. Even the committee maybe itself, with the oversight that you're getting, we all must actually applaud ourselves for the progress, this good progress, and we're looking forward to clean audits. But a lot still needs to be done. We appreciate the fact that you are looking at how to apply austerity measures. The idea of video conferencing is good. Consultancy fees are out. And I'm sure you will at some stage come to a situation where you're telling us that we have actually employed more people who can do the work. And there's absolutely zero amount paid to consultants. That's what we're actually looking forward to. And the vacancy rate is something that you need to actually really truly take care of, because South Africans are looking for jobs, and it's only through some of these government departments that a lot of people can still manage to get jobs. Of course, jobs are not supposed to be provided by government only. We are hoping that the private sector will also come on board to assist South Africans to get jobs. Part of the overspending was on fleet management. And you indicated also maintenance of your fleet. But previously what we actually also talked about was how we utilize our inmates to cover up areas that could be difficult, even just like ordinary things like painting, the correctional centers. The example I gave at that point was that I visited Sun City and there was too much of pipes that are leaking. The walls really needed paint, and I'm sure that paint out of the billions that we are giving you could afford to buy paint, because the argument is that you are waiting for public works. But the fact of the matter is that on a day-to-day basis, you have an institution that is so full of healthy, good-looking young men, young and old men, who can be in the position to just paint where they are actually sleeping themselves. Why don't we actually just utilize that approach as part of our rehabilitation program? The same goes to things like fleet management. We need to actually train them to know how to do motor mechanics. And then they could actually help to maintain our own vehicles. Maybe in future we can be in the position to say, when it comes to maintenance, we are not really having a lot of money that is put into it because we utilize our own. It seems that you need to continue to look into the regions and participation of regions and accountability of regions in terms of the control measures. I think I would be interested to know how you are actually continuing to work on that area so that, you know, we don't find ourselves falling back into the situation where the audits are actually qualified. Thank you. Can we get a response from the department?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honourable members. Chairperson, let me say in the beginning, we really appreciate the positive comments, but we know that it's still work in progress, and that is just to give us more energy to continue to change more rates in the performance system to be green. Chairperson, let me also say from the onset, we have a team here, and although it's a long team, let me just clarify that for the performance information and financials, it's basically the three of us here. In terms of cost containment, we're also not bringing everybody every time down for the engagement. So if there are one or two that we can't respond to as amongst ourselves, we will then appreciate the opportunity just to follow up in writing, as well as we might not be in a position to give the Honourable Committee progress on matters that are not directly linked to the first quarter. But Chairperson, if that is acceptable, we will respond to the comments and the questions. Chairperson, the team will assist. I will take a number of them. And between the Senior Management CFO, and we'll also make use of Ms. Vandaba Kokong, who is there next to the CFO. Although she's here for the parole presentation, some of the questions fall in her purview, and while she's here, she can respond to electronic monitor and those linked to that. Chairperson, in terms of, let me start with the first part of a general comment, Chairperson, in terms of remand detainees. Chairperson, we agree as a department that we still have a long way to go. As from last week, Chairperson, we had 40,961 remand detainees in our facilities and 119,000 sentenced, give you a total of 160,000 offenders, inmates behind bars. Chair, if we're looking back to the highest peak that we had in 2004, we were then at 186,000. I'm just mentioning this to contextualize, to say that the multi-pronged strategy that we're applying assisted with the down management. But Chair, we are almost now at a stage where you find yourself in a tight corner, that what you could do have resulted in positive down managing, but the numbers are now almost stagnant on around 160,000-159,000 over the past number of months. Chairperson, I also want to touch on what Honourable Ms. Breitenbach was asking about overcrowding. Chairperson, we agree as a department that we don't have any direct control in terms of the overcrowding target. But Chairperson, in terms of Treasury and the finance part thereof, CFO can give more details, but in terms of the principle, Treasury is also using offender numbers for the budget allocations. Therefore, it was identified some years ago as a strategic indicator. Therefore, we continue to have it in our IPP and in our strategic plan. If we look at the strategic plan, you will see that for the next end up to 1920, it's still there. And Chairperson, it's not easy for a department to remove any indicators which is included in the strategic plan. Chairperson, although it's difficult, I think for a government it's assisting, because we can then use this indicator from our side in our engagements with the cluster to make sure that we don't remove this from the radar screen. So although we are in a predicament as correctional services, at least assisting Chairperson for the committee and the country at large to have this visible, and that we can report against that. Chairperson, I'm not going to go into the details of what we are doing on a day-to-day basis to down-manage especially remand detainees. We continue to do that, and as a cluster chair, it's also part of the agendas of the NEEC, which is chaired by the judge, the Honourable Chief Justice. It's also part of our case flow management processes in the region, as well as the development committee. So, Chairperson, I can assure the committee that we continue to look at overcrowding as an indicator, and we are struggling, Chairperson, with it, but I think the fact that we are stabilizing now on 160 give indication that there's work that we are doing. Chairperson, on the question of Honourable Breitenbach linked with overcrowding of the number of inmates who have bail 1,000 rand and less, that is not immediately available, but what we have available, Chairperson, is on average between 15% and 17%, it ranges between those two percentages, of the 40,000 remand detainees do have bail which cannot afford them. So that bail can be obviously below 1,000 or even higher. Chairperson, but I think that it's an important area to have people behind bars because they can't afford it. I think that is also an important area that the committee can assist to look into that. And I know, Chairperson, in terms of the envisaged visits to Durban Westville as well as to Johannesburg, where the committee will focus in November, December on this area of remand detainees, we will also make sure that during those visits we have a detailed breakdown of the bail so that the committee can engage with us as well as the other cluster partners that will be there.
Honourable Breitenbach, just want to make a follow-up on something.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's possible at some point to get the figures of those people who are in prison and have bail on, and the charges that they're in charge.
Chairperson, I think we, as the department, we will make a note and provide information. We have that information available, Chair, to give a summary of that 15% to 70%, to say those who are behind bars, give the bail categories as well as roughly the crime categories, to give the Honourable Portfolio Committee an indication on that picture. We can do that, and we undertake to provide that, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of link to overcrowding, Chairperson, was the question by Honourable Mr. Horn of the progress in terms of the facilities, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of new facilities, we do have the 435 as provided in the first quarter review. Chairperson, although we are measuring this annually, we are also having this on our radar screen. And in terms of the new facilities, Chair, Sanin, we know all, and we explained during previous meetings that there was this insolvency problem of that specific company. Public Works have finished their processes to close that chapter, and they advertised, Chairperson, for a new service provider, and we can confirm that although as a department we were hoping that this will happen earlier in this financial year, it eventually happened, Chair, and we still hope, Chairperson, that the new service provider will be on site by hopefully January next year. And Chairperson, I can just remind the committee that Sanin was completed roughly just above 90%, meaning that you don't need a lot of work to finalize that project. And Chairperson, we will just need to then wait for that process to be concluded, that the contractors can be on site, and we will, as a department, continue to engage with public works and also use the structures which were set up by our Honourable Deputy Minister and the Honourable Deputy Minister of Public Works to have a team from both departments to make sure that we look into this matter. Chairperson, the next part of the bed spaces was the upgrading of existing infrastructure to create more bed space. Chairperson, there is the number is 925, which consists of CMAX, where it will be a renovation of the whole facility and we will gain additional 12 bed spaces. Chairperson, there it was also the problem with the Karankula who was insolvent. That process was also completed by Public Works. It was advertised, Chairperson, as we are speaking now, the contractor is already on site for the last 4 months, if I'm not mistakenly, and that work is progressing, Chairperson. In terms of Standerton, Chairperson, there's additional bed space for this financial year of 604. There's also a phase two that will go into the next financial year. Chairperson, I can confirm to the portfolio committee that the work is still on target and the 406 will be available during this financial year. I can also inform the committee that at this stage the basic work is being completed. It's now the installation of IT-related equipment at Standerton, Chairperson. Chairperson, the last additional bed space from existing correctional facility for this financial year is escort. The gain will be 309, and Chairperson, according to all indications, is that the target to complete this project is March 2017, but according to the report, Chairperson, in terms of progress with the building, we received confirmation that it's still on target. Chairperson, that is with regard to the facility part in the first quarter as well in the questions. Chairperson, I think I will pause and I will fill up if my colleagues are not addressing some of those areas. Chair, let me lastly say your comments in terms of the utilization of offenders to do maintenance work. Chair, I can confirm that that is also work in progress, and I think at a later stage we will be in a better position to give tangible progress with this area. Chairperson, there was also your question in terms of municipal services that the CFO touched in his presentation. Chairperson, we previously, all these functions were done by Public Works and we were just paying municipal services. Chairperson, but about 2-3 years ago, we received approval and some additional funds to have facility managers in all our regional offices. As we are speaking today, Chairperson, we have already 4 of those facility directors who have assumed duty. There are 2 regions outstanding, Western Cape as well as Free State and Northern Cape. We have completed those interviews, Chairperson. We're just waiting now for the final process of competency-based assessment of those recommended candidates. And then we hope that they will assume duty either the 1st of December or hopefully then on the latest the 1st of January. So Chairperson, if those people are in place, that will be assisting the part of the investigation where we are scrutinizing in more detail the invoices that we are receiving from Public Works, and eventually, Chairperson, if all goes the way that we want to implement this, is that function will eventually move to correctional services, that we will do it ourselves, and that will also be a saving, which the CFO can maybe touch on, of a 5% fee that you are paying on those amounts. Now, 5% doesn't seem a lot, but if it is almost $1 billion of municipal services, the 5% is a amount that is not just a small amount, Chairperson. Yeah, but that is also work in progress. Chairperson, thank you very much. I'll ask my colleagues to do the other questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson.
You will come after him. Okay, thanks.
On the issue of performance bonuses, we do budget for performance bonus on an annual basis. In this instance, it was just a delay in terms of effecting the payment, which was only made in the current financial year, but budget is made. But maybe to also indicate, Chairperson, as a department, we do not pay for a while, and it was a condition set. None of those bonuses relate to SMS members. It's employees below 12, whose obviously compensation is different from SMS members. So that's where we are. Now, the issue of vacancies in relation to the funding of it, because austerity measures are introducing this 1% cut on compensation of employees, we have then said this week as management to say, in fact, it was immediately after the allocation letter came out, to say we need to then review our headcounts where we want to go in the next 3 years to avoid exceeding the ceiling of our compensation budget, so that we prioritize now all core functions and respective positions at the regional level, at the management area level, and then consolidate those so that we project positions that we may in fact have to fill because of their critical for our programs, but also abandon or abolish those that may cannot be funded over time. So that's why we have taken that a view as management, so that we do not then shortchange the core programs with positions that are not necessarily critical given the cuts.
Maybe just on that, is to say that we've been talking about this over a long period of time. What we need to see is movement in terms of filling those positions. Whichever way you take, even if you're going to do to compare the skills with the demands of the job, you need to do it like yesterday, so that there comes a time when you don't talk about vacant positions within, because then the number is huge. Do you have an idea as to how many positions are vacant now?
We'll provide that check.
Okay.
It should be around 4,000. Just under 4,000.
It's a lot.
Can I continue? We'll come back to the exact number. The question from Honorable Musabo regarding the transfers and subsidies, that was in relation to, on transfer and subsidies, the main items that we pay out of that is leave gratuities for service termination. So when people leave, we pay them out their leave days. And those are the main items, as well as payments to SASICA, which for purposes of training. So those are the two items. Whereas with the leave gratuity, obviously the projections never, the spending plan, you can't really get it right. So we tend to adjust it as we go along during the year, especially at the end, because of the exit that we cannot really get it accurately in terms of that spending plan. The last question was on the oversight of region. I think as a department, especially on finances and supply chain, we've actually improved in terms of those oversight accountability measures between regions and ourselves. On SCM, what we've done is, historically, the procurement at head office was servicing head office work. And we've transformed that directory to also provide policy enforcement on the procurement side. And we have started also reviewing tenders for compliance before award, because the in instances where we are incurring irregular expenditure, it's so obviously there is non-compliance. So we are trying to avoid that before awarding is done, so that we improve on our compliance levels. I think with respect to budgeting, we have a budget committee where regions obviously account to that committee, and remedial action is taken in terms of budgetary cuts and efficiency measures when we see that there isn't management of that budget appropriately. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. You may proceed.
I just want to respond to the one on the manual processes of collecting performance information, and to indicate that I think that has been observed as a weakness, and the process of automating is underway. However, what we are doing in the interim, whilst we still have the manual process, is ongoing training of people who are responsible for collecting performance information data in the regions. So, as an ongoing process, we are observing that there are reductions in the kind of errors and the application of the technical indicator descriptions as we go along. So it is a matter of an ongoing process, and over time we will begin to realize the benefits of the ongoing training. Chair, just to answer your question on the vacancies, currently we have 3,900 positions that are vacant.
That's a lot. Thank you, Mr. Katen. 3,900 is a lot. There's a lot of people out there that are looking for jobs. Let's fill the positions. It will be helpful for the department itself, because it is a lacking capacity, unless you're budgeting for positions that you don't need. But if 3,900 people are absent from work in one day from any establishment, I imagine it will become catastrophic. So I don't know whether you are in the position to continue to perform maximally without the 3,900. And there's got to come time when we reach that conclusion, and I'm happy that you brought it up, COO, that we need to do some form of a review of these positions to see whether we do need them or we don't need them, so that in the next budget we don't have them if we can't occupy them fully. Mamutapo. Honorable Mutapo.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the questions which were not answered.
Chairperson, my apologies. Ms. Vandava will respond to the electronic monitoring. Chair, and the one on the Operation Hira corruption, we need to undertake, because I don't want to speculate. We rather come back in writing on that one, because none of us have the full information. So I'll propose that we come back to the Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Molbega, for this input. Like I said at the beginning, we are in the process of fighting corruption, and we're going to have to put bodies in this space where corruption is actually spoken of, so that we deal with it once and for all. And nobody should be allowed to work in all of these departments, government departments, if they are corrupt. Thank you. We will appreciate such a report from you. Okay. Do you want to make a suggestion, Honorable Mutapo?
Within
21 days, Honorable Mutapo is suggesting that we have a report of that nature, so that we don't continue just talking about things, and it becomes like glamorous for South Africans to talk about it. I don't know whether you have actually realized, with any South African that starts talking, they say it's because there is corruption. But we want to give this corruption a face and start dealing with corruption, Honorable Chair. And we are actually saying this is what all the departments need to do, to really pull out all of these people that are referred to be corrupt, so that whoever comes into the public space and talk about corruption, they must assist us to actually identify who is corrupt, so that they can help all of us to know how to deal with corruption, because we've got so much of money in South Africa that we put into dealing with corruption. Are we saying that all the money that is put in all these institutions that are dealing with corruption is a waste of money, or we should close all of those offices if we are really finding it difficult for us to deal with corruption? So we will actually expect a report in 21 days that will actually then begin the process. Thank you. Mayor Van Dava. Yes, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair, honorable members. On the issue of electronic monitoring, if I may start whether is this solution a solution that we need, and is it a solution that is lacking? I think what we have seen during the pilot and now is that if the intention of the solution is good and it can alleviate overcrowding. But what we have observed is that when we piloted, the challenges of disrespecting the system, we did not experience. As soon as we started with the rollout, and what we are observing is that there is a continuous deliberate damaging of the devices by the and they will either ban the devices or lose the devices. And the challenge then that that is very common, and we forever sending the damaged tag to the service provider, and unfortunately the service provider can only send them to Israel where they are subcontracted to and still situated or located, and then we have to wait for that. But we do have a buffer stock. The buffer stock is supposed to be assisting us with a 24-hour replacement of the damage tech, and that is currently that is taking place. And in terms of what happens to the offenders that have damaged the tech or lost the tech, we do have a food corruption supervision committee. And we do have a disciplinary code and process for the offenders that damage state property. So that function does take place, and then those offenders are subjected to the supervision committee. What we have done, Chapter 10, is that we've taken stock of all those damage since they were out, the damage tech and the offenders, and we have requested the regions to provide us with the measures taken against those offenders that have damaged the text, because those texts since that time they have been replaced, and those offenders have been repaired. And what we also have observed, Mr. President, is that the single and the two checkers, because those are the ones that have started the rubber, and the offenders have got a tendency of cutting those ones, and they have got a tendency of not charging the batteries, so that they cannot be monitorable, because we do inform them that they need to charge the batteries, and then you realize that they are not charging the batteries, but the disciplinary measures will take place around that. And what the department has done since that time, and the non-compliance of the replacement of the tech with contract management did serve the service provider with the non-compliance to the contract. And also we have met as on Friday we have met with the senior counsel because there's quite a number of other issues that we are dealing with in terms of the non-compliance. And we have agreed with the council that we need to set up an audit committee that is going to audit the contract, the effectiveness of the contract, so that we can be able to come up with the informed results. What is exactly in terms of we have a value for money and all these experiences that we never anticipated during the time of the pilot. And I'm sure we can be able to provide the community with the results of our enforcement that
Thank you very much. I don't know whether due diligence was done. before we could actually embark on this process. What you could tell us of rubbers that are just easily cut? I mean, it seems that we could have been identified right at the beginning. Maybe what you need to do is to just share with us the due diligence report so that we understand. And then also what I'm interested in is to know what action has been taken against all of these offenders that tampered with the device. Has any action been taken? What is the action? How many of them actually tampered with the device? And what was subsequently done?
Unfortunately, I don't have the exact figure of the number. I can make that available to the committee. And in terms of the region, because of the damage to state property, there had to be funds, as you know, attached to that in terms of the outcome. But what the committees, the Supervision Committees, informed us in the different regions, those offenders, they are coming, they are unemployed, they are coming from the poor background. But what they have done, they have they've reclassified them. They have put them under high risk, so there will be a high frequency of monitoring, and also they have, in terms of the house detention, for a period of time. But we have not received reports from all regions in terms of exactly what actions have been taken. So it depends on things, and that's what the question also be made available to the family.
Are you the overall person responsible for parole?
Yes.
Okay, which means we will need a report from you on this, yes. A report that says, yes, I've got it under control, I know what is happening, and the challenges that are actually posed in this area, these are the strategies that we're dealing with it. And that is more than
enough. Sheena, thank you. I think you've covered me because I was saying that on behalf of the department, we'll undertake to make sure that we provide a report and not speculate on what happened with those, but give comprehensive feedback on what the questions posed. Thank you, Chair.
RCLMM and Gauteng, filling in of positions of regional commissioner.
Chairperson, thank you. As we are aware that those positions are filled by committees above our level, but I just received confirmation, Chair, that the shortlisting of those three positions, HR, Gauteng as well as LMM, is in progress, but unfortunately further details I don't have at this point in time. Thank you, Chairperson.
Are you answered, Montaf?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And then are they participating in National Enhancement Committee at national level, then also PEC at provincial level, in terms of reducing overcrowding of remand detainees?
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, in terms of the national structure of the NEEC, the department is represented by the national commissioner, and if he's not available, it will be the two chief deputy commissioners responsible for remand and sentence offenders, meaning that it will be CDC Rotman or myself, but the three of us are on that committee. In terms of the NOC, Chairperson, that is the national structure that the working committee for the NCCS, we are also duly represented on the NOC structure. In terms of regional structures or provincial structures, the regional commissioners are also representing the department on those structures, and as well as, Chairperson, on other structures like case flow, as well as development committee, we are on those structures. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Commissioner. You haven't made any reference to internal audit, but I just want to make a comment to say that we want to see internal committee. The internal audit that is really working, because it's a prerequisite to a clean audit that we're now working towards. I'm just hoping that you've got the system in place. it's working, it's efficient, so that we don't get a report in future that it has failed. Because nothing was actually mentioned about the internal audit processes and how they're doing. Thank you. I think we can then move forward with our program to a briefing on parole administration.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of the parole presentation, I just want to, as the interim, just inform the Honourable Committee that it will be in three phases. In the Department of Correctional Services, Chairperson, parole administration is a separate function and is not coupled currently with community corrections, which is responsible for the parole supervision. So we'll ask Mr. De Bruin to do the first part of the presentation, Chairperson, and the second part will be Deputy Commissioner Vandaba, and then, Chairperson, the third part of the NCCS and the functioning of the NCCS and with its functions and mandate, we'll ask Mr. Tsetsewa from the Ministry to take the committee through that part. Chairperson, I was informed that we have 30 minutes for this presentation. So if that is still 30 minutes, we'll then ask the first part to be 10 to 12 minutes, the second part 10 to 12, and then Mr. Tsewa to take the last of the 30 minutes for the presentation of the NCCS. If that is fine, Chairperson, I'll ask the colleagues to continue. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me just apologize. We take it for granted that we know all each other around the table. Chairperson, the presenter will be Director Peter Brain. He's responsible for pre-release resettlement, meaning that the parole policies and the correctional supervision parole boards, they are also within his area of responsibility. And then Ms. Mvandaba Pokong, she is the Deputy Commissioner responsible for social reintegration. She will do the part of the social reintegration. And Ms. Tsewa is a special advisor to our Honourable Minister, and she will then do the last part. And on the other side, Chairperson, is Advocate Peter. I'm just missing the other surname. Chairperson is recently appointed as the secretary of the NCCS, just to introduce them briefly to the committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you, Mr. Smallberger. The presentation that we have is a very comprehensive one and deals with some of the history as well as detailed procedures. So if it is fine with the committee, I'm going to go very quickly through the history and the procedures and then focus a little bit more on the things that I think we deem more important. So on the first few pages you will find the mandates, which is in the Correctional Services Act and the Criminal Procedure Act, as well as the white paper. I'm not going to stand still on that. On the history, I think just safe to say that we have introduced a new policy in terms of placement and release with the introduction of the Correctional Services Act in October 2004, and the major impact of that was that for the first time community members were represented on the boards, and actually the decisions of the boards are not managed or not influenced by the DCS. We only have one member DCS official currently on the parole boards. So on the slide that deals with the establishment of the parole boards, there are currently 53 parole boards established all through the country. These boards operate on management area level, and there are some management areas that have more than one board. These boards consist of a chairperson, a vice chairperson, both of who are from the community, one DCS official, two part-time community members, and then they have co-option from SACS on cases serving sentences of 10 years or more for most of the crimes. Currently, the parole board contracts have been extended until the 31st of March next year, 2017. I'm going to skip the functions of the parole board, but in broad, it comes down to parole boards take decisions on the placement and release of offenders serving determinate sentences, and they make recommendations to the minister on those that serve life sentences, and also make recommendations to the courts in terms of those who are serving self-declared dangerous criminals. On what is parole, I just want to quickly mention one or two things that we think are important, and the first thing is that when sentenced offenders are placed into the system of community correction to serve the remainder of the sentence. So release on parole is not a release from the sentence. During that time, the offender is under specific conditions and also under the supervision of correctional officials in the system of community corrections. On the principles for parole consideration, I just want to quickly focus on one or two things. Firstly, the protection of the community on the short term should be fundamental. It means that the release of an offender should not affect the community negatively. On the longer term, the reduction of risk of reoffending by having identified offending behavior and having addressed it sufficiently to consider any risk of placement to be acceptable and manageable in the system of community corrections. Supervised placement increases the likelihood of successful reintegration. And then also on the conditions, we say that conditions must not be set blank and that conditions should be appropriate and proportional and should facilitate the protection of the community and should also promote social reintegration. On the review of parole board decisions, also just briefly to say that there is a review board and consists of members of the National Council, and I'm not sure whether it will be included, but I think the National Council brief should deal with the review board.
Generally, it boils down to that the National Commissioner, the Minister or the Inspecting Judge may identify and refer cases to the review board. Victim participation in parole board. There is a table providing the statistics on victim participation. And you will see that from 2010-11, where the number of victims involved was 253, it grew to 2015-16 to a total of 2,279 victims that participated in parole board proceedings. On the status of the Van Vieren judgments, the Van Vieren judgments refer to those cases that were sentenced prior to 1 March 1994 and where an offender Van Wyk took the department to court to say that he should have been considered according to the policy that applied at the time when they were sentenced. And the policy that at that time was in place was to be considered after 10 years but not to be placed out after completion of at least 15 years. In terms of that, a total of 369 offenders qualified, and all of these have been considered already, and some have been considered now for the second and the third time by the minister. Of those, a total of 272 have been placed out on parole. And currently there are about 92 are currently serving sentences and are considered from time to time. On the Van Wyk cases, now the judgment on Van Wyk was that the offenders that were sentenced after the 1st of March 1994 up till the 30th of September 2004 had to complete 20 years of their sentence, and that was also in terms of Section 136 of the Correctional Services Act. The North Gauteng High Court then handed down a judgment in 2011 which said that all the offenders that were in detention until the 30th of September, including the lifers, should be granted maximum credits. And maximum credits were allocated, and maximum credits was to reduce the consideration date what not more than one-third of the sentence. So this meant that all those offenders sentenced before the 1st of October had the consideration dates advanced from 20 years to 13 years and 4 months. And then also there was special remission of sentence granted in 2012, as well as then later the court also said the special remission of sentence granted in 2005 must also be awarded to these offenders, which meant that the consideration period was then further advanced and is now 12 years and 4 months. The next slide gives per region the number of parole boards, and then also next to that it gives the seats of the parole boards in which management area they are seated. And the slide thereafter gives more detail on each parole board. You will see, for instance, Free State Northern Cape Grootvlei, which means that there is a board sitting at Grootvlei and it serves the centers next to that, which is Brandfort, Boshoff, Ladybrand, Winburg, Wefner, and Mangaung. So I'm also not going to go through this in detail, but it's available for the members if they are interested in the detail. Coming to the vacancies of the parole boards, there's also a slide on the vacancies. And just to explain it, if we look at Free State chairpersons, it means there are no vacancies and there are 7 posts. Next to that, there are 5 vacancies and there are 7 posts. So again, I'm not going to go down in detail. Safe to say that when the minister approved the extension of the contracts earlier this year, he also approved that the vacant posts must be advertised and filled, and that process is currently taking place. The next slide is a performance from the parole boards, and it comes from the operational plan, from the APP, and this is the performance for 2015-16. You will see on the right-hand side that it is currently at 96.52, and it was up from 2014 at the stage when it was 84%. The detailed breakdown of the regions are provided in the slide. On a question of how many of these are actually placed out on parole, you will see there's a summary of the key performance indicators for 2015-16, and there's a breakdown of cases considered by the parole boards. Parole, of all the decisions that they have taken, 45.2% were placed out on parole, and then 6.17% was a conversion of sentence into correctional supervision. And medical parole, a very small percentage, but in total the placements approved by parole boards boils down to 51.87% of all the cases that they have seen during that year. So in 4.5% sentence expiry was approved, and 43.63% of the cases the parole boards asked further profiles. Looking at the next slide, the consideration of offenders who maintain that they have not committed offences for which they were sentenced, and this is not only applicable to them, this is applicable to all offenders who are being considered for placement. To say that a number of factors are considered by parole boards, which include the following: the completion of the legislatively required minimum detention period, a positive report on conduct and behaviour, including relevant interventions and programs where applicable, proof that rehabilitation or development took place, the risk posed to the community or victim must be assessed and must be reduced or managed appropriately, participation in compulsory risk and needs assessment and completion of required programs and interventions, including restorative justice orientation program, proof of a monitorable and appropriate support system, acceptance of the conditions of placement by the offender, and as indicated, a number of factors are considered, not only participation in RJ or failure to apologize to victims. These issues were dealt with extensively during the parole board and CMC training that we did earlier this year. And I just want to reiterate this to say that we acknowledge that some offenders will not acknowledge that they have committed a crime where they think they have not committed the crime, or where they are of the opinion that they did not commit the crime. But we are there to enforce sentences of the courts, but we take everything into consideration. So the fact that an offender does not participate in restorative justice or does not acknowledge that he or she has committed the crime does not prevent placement on parole. Addressing challenges during this year, we have training sessions between June and September for all regions, and we included case management committees, parole boards, heads of community corrections, and regional coordinators, social reintegration and corrections. And we focused on the challenges that were identified as the most pressing ones, and those were the compilation of the profile report, the quality and the format thereof, the conversions of sentence into correctional supervision, and there we specifically the 2761I cases, and the 276A3A cases, and that's in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. Then we also focused on the promotion of Administrative Justice Act, PAJA, principles of decision making, and also making reasons available for your decision. We focused on court judgments relating to parole, decision making and formulation of motivation reasons for decisions. We focused specifically on the requirements for lifers. We also presented the performance indicators. There was a focus on the setting of appropriate placement conditions. We also focused on relationships between the case management committees, parole boards, community corrections, also including heads of centers. Separate training sessions for the heads of the centers were also held, and a one-day session with all the heads of centers focused specifically on placement and release matters. On the next page, you can see that there are the dates and the venues where the training took place. Addressing challenges, we developed a new compliance checklist and cover page for the G326, the parole profile report, and that was introduced and implemented. Profile reports of lifers that did not comply to the basic requirements were taken back to the regions, and also were also workshopped during the training sessions. On the next slide, quality of control, we continue with that to say that we also had intensive workshops with the specific parole boards and the centers where the profiles did not comply, and then there was a national directive that was issued by the National Commissioner in this regard. The review of the parole system, a task team was appointed to make recommendations to the Minister on the review of the parole system. Preliminary recommendations have been submitted to the Minister, and once the Minister's inputs have been received and reworked, the committee will be briefed comprehensively. And here I must also say that the preliminary recommendations that were made to the Minister was on a very high level, and the Minister requested for more detailed submissions to him and to be reworked by the committee, by the task team. In the meantime, we have also developed new tools to be tested and will be compulsory for utilization by CMCs and parole boards and also the supervision committees. And on the next slide, I just mentioned these tools very quickly. The one is the reoffending risk tool, which is a tool that will be used to ensure that when parole is the reoffending risk tool is a statistical indicator to indicate what are the risk areas for reoffending. And it is not a tool to classify an offender, but to highlight the risks that the parole board should consider when they take decisions on parole. Following that is a decision-making matrix, which is intended to ensure that there's a standardized decision-making process for all parole boards. And this is to eliminate complaints by offenders that in some parole boards they get parole easier than in other parole boards. And also, this will ensure that if we are taken to court and there are litigation against the parole board, that we can prove that we are following a standard and comprehensive decision-making process. The parole revocation tool is one that is being will be used at the supervision committee as well as at parole boards. And also the purpose of that is to standardize the consideration factors and the decision-making process when before parole is revoked. Filling of vacancies, I've already referred to this, that the contracts have been extended till the 31st of March next year, and that the Minister has approved the advertisement and filling of vacancies. Medical parole, I'm not going to go through the slides of the medical parole because it is comprehensive background on how the medical parole system was changed and how it was changed, except to say that the current Medical Parole Advisory Board consists of 13 members, of whom some are specialists, and they were appointed by the Honourable Minister Masuta in June 2015. The Medical Parole Advisory Board meets on a monthly basis and review applications for medical parole as received, and currently they consider approximately 10 cases per month. The Medical Parole Board must make recommendations on all cases where medical parole might be appropriate before a parole board or the head of the center or the minister will take decisions on medical parole. In Regulation 29A, there is a slide, few slides on that, which deals with the types of, in the first one is the infectious conditions and then the non-infectious conditions, which are to be considered or to be looked at. And then also to say that at the bottom of the slide, slide 43, there's a note that says the Medical Parole Advisory Board may consider any other condition not listed in the sub-regulation 5A or B if it complies with the principles contained in section 79 of the Act. Okay, then there's a medical process that follows, which I'm not going to stand still now. And then maybe just on the last slide on the delegated authority, just to say that prior to a decision being taken for medical parole, the following are considered: that the risk of reoffending is low, there must be an indication that arrangements for the inmate's supervision and care and treatment has been made in the community, there must be an indication whether at the time of sentencing the presiding officer was aware of the medical condition. Any sentencing remarks of the trial judge or magistrate must be taken into consideration. The type of offence and the length of the sentence outstanding, the previous criminal conduct of record of such an offender, and then the conduct, disciplinary record, adaptation, training, aptitude, industry, physical and mental state of such an offender as prescribed by section 42. Thank you. Then I will hand over to the DC next to me.
From the consideration side, I think I'll pass the slides that define to the Community Corrections as we hope that the honourable members, they are aware that it's okay. Community Corrections, it's all those that are placed under correctional supervision. And also those that are afforded, that could not afford bail, those ATPs that are placed under Section 52F. And what we have done in terms of the caseload of community corrections, we have broken down the number of offenders that are in the community corrections system, which totals up to 69.722, those that are on parole and those that are in under correctional supervision in terms of 2761I, 2761H, 2768(3), and Section 287, and Section 297 in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, as well as the awaiting trial person. Also, we have thought that let's break down the key activities and the projects that Community Corrections is focusing on. Our core functions there is to ensure that we physically and electronically monitor offenders. We also enter into partnerships with the halfway houses, with the NPOs for halfway houses. We ensure that the employability of parolees and probationers, the participation of the victims, indirect and direct victims, into the victim-offender dialogue as well as the restorative justice programs. Formalized partnership for employability, as well as community profiling. In terms of the restorative justice chair, my colleague has already alluded that we do have the correctional program on restorative justice that most of the offenders, depending on the need, are participating inside our centers. But we can say that since the appointment of the social auxiliary workers, we have seen an increase on the participation of victims. But you will notice that the number of offenders is lesser than the victims. That is because Chairperson, that one offender will have to deal with a number of victims, being direct and indirect, in terms of the families as well as the communities, because we regard them as indirect victims. In terms of the involvement of the families prior and during placement of offenders, and during the confirmation of addresses, when we go out, we consult with families, the caregivers, relatives, friends, and employers to explain upon what the CMC has given us, that this person is about to be considered for placement,
to be able to take the families through and explain to them what does that mean, the placement of a person in a community correction system. And we will also visit visit the families, the relatives, and the friends and the employers physically, and ensure that we verify the address, whether it's address that is monitorable, and whether it's in an informal settlement or the formal settlement. And we also have to check who is the breadwinner that will have provide support to this particular person. And when it comes to employers and farmers, we do go to the farmers to ensure that they will allow us to come into their premises when we have to monitor, because one of the conditions is that we have to monitor them in the workplace. And also the farmers, we do go to the owners of the farms and get consent from them that they will allow us to visit the person during the time of parole. And we also have the person that agrees that it will be the caregiver or the caretaker of the parolee, and or the probationer will have to, we always provide them with this kind of brochure and chairperson that is clearly stipulating what kind of conditions are set and what will be the responsibility of the caregiver. And the offender as well, after we have explained to the offender or the parolee or the probationer, they will have to sign then on those that they are accepting the conditions set for them. Upon admission into our offices in terms of orientation and the confirmation of the conditions, the offender will be taken through the ORP to explain to the offender what kind of conditions that they need to comply with, and as well as that what kind of programs that they need to undertake while they are serving their sentence under community correction. And also, Chairperson, we do have the supervision committee that at a 6 month interval, they will review or evaluate the sentence plan, the correctional sentence plan of the probationer or the parolee. And this supervision committee, they are available in all our 218 community corrections offices. In terms of electronic monitoring, Chairperson, I do want to say that since inception, we have managed to tag 2,278 offenders that have participated in the electronic monitoring program. Assistance with obtaining work or employability for parolees and probationers, we do we have made really a progress in terms of that. And we have entered into MOUs and SLAs with the different departments, Department of Environmental Affairs, Department of Public Works, COGSTA, and various service providers, and as well as business. What is good is that what we have seen in those business partners or agencies, they do provide our parolees and ex-offenders with the skills as well as stipend to ensure that they do have means to sustain themselves and support themselves while they are serving their parole or probation outside the community. Chairperson, partnership with other stakeholders, we have seen that we are having partnership with institutions of higher learning, especially in the issue of our community profiling. Community profiling that is assisting us a lot to ensure that we place our parolees in appropriately when it comes to skills. Partnership with NPOs on halfway houses, Chairperson. Thus far, we have entered into partnership in the Gauteng region. The Natshwarena House is now up and running. The Eastern Cape, the Vezokuhle, is up and running. In the Western Cape, the Beautiful Ashes is also up and running. And in the LNN region, we've got four houses that are running there: Shilembeni, World Focus Victims, One Foundation, and Youth and Community Development. In terms of service points, Chairperson, from April this year up until August, we have seen that we have managed to establish 105 new service points, and this is evident in our two indicators, and the probationers without violation as well as parolees without violation, because these service points, they serve as accessibility offices towards parolees and probationers within their community, and so that we can eliminate or limit the violations or for those offenders, that needs to go to the offices of COMCO, because most of the time you find that they do not have taxi fares to go to the office so that they can comply with their condition. But with the service points, we see that they are assisting us. Committee profiling, Chairperson, as I've alluded, that we've got institutions of higher learning where they placed students to assist us and compile this committee profile for us to be able to place them for job opportunities and assist them. But with the challenges of community corrections, Chairperson, I think my colleague has already alluded that the training that we had, we've addressed all the other the challenges that have already been alluded on community corrections. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we also provide the opportunity for the National Council for Correctional Services to provide the report? 10 minutes. Members will follow on the screen because we don't have copies. The date is on the screen.
The minister on policy development or on his own accord any developing policy with regard to correctional services. It's also important to note that section 78(3) also stipulates that when minister makes decision on offenders who are serving life sentences whether to grant parole or not, he has to he requests the National Council to also recommend to him whether to grant parole or not. The next one really is on the review board, which comprises parole review board, which comprises of members of the NCCS. Section 77 stipulates who needs to sit on the review board. And I must say that since I've been with the council for, I think, the past 5 years, there's not a lot of cases that are received by the review board. I'm not sure why, but yeah, we don't have a lot of cases. Maybe if I can go to a slide on page 12 on the operations. If you look at the number of cases for the past 3 years that the NCCS looked at, In 2014, they considered as a whole 163 cases. 2015, 476, and currently on 2016, with their last meeting, which was last month, they've considered as far about 308 cases. I think it's important to state that the members meet once a month for a period of 3 days, and during that period they consider profiles and also consider any other policy or anything else that the minister would have recommended forwarded to them to consider. Currently they are considering three policies that they've received from the minister. The one is a policy on the sale of offender arts and crafts, the other one is on restorative justice, and then the third one that they are currently sitting with is on the minimum security standard policy. Also part of their role is to visit various centres and recommend to the minister anything that they of the view that the minister needs to know about. Also, once the judge has considered once the NCCS has considered the profiles and the judge has put together a recommendation for the minister usually takes about maybe 7 to 14 days to consider or to make his own decision. At times, he does differ from the decision of the NCCS, depending on whatever case is before him. But I think it's important to note that when it comes to parole application for medical parole, those ones are usually given agency, where within 48 to 72 hours he does make recommendation on those. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The report will be just for notification. We're not going to engage on it because the structure is not yet represented. We will continue with comments and questions on the correctional supervision and parole report. Over to you, members. Honourable, I'll recognise Honourable Horn, Honourable Bongo, Honourable Mutapo, Honourable Mutseha. In that order, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Acting Chair. As even as committee members, first of all, I think thank you for the presentation. Some of the information that really places us in a position to understand the current parole dispensation better. I think as committee members and even ordinary South Africans, we are in a position where sometimes our view or perception of parole is also formed by the high-profile review cases. We see like the Waterkloof 4 or the Waterkloof 4, that whole saga there. So basically my question is whether we can get information as to how many decisions of the parole boards are taken on review, and of that percentage, how many are successful ultimately? Just to put us in a position to understand the legal aspect regarding this better. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Khan, Honourable Bongo.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think I just need an update on, you know, after we put somebody on parole, you'll expect that person to go to apply for work. Sometimes, whilst they're incarcerated, they could get bursaries and so on. How far are we in terms of the making sure that this issue that they have a criminal record does not stop them towards getting employment? Because most of them, they come to us crying that they are not employable. More, or matter of fact, most of this will then get back to be criminals again as a result of this.
Recording device.
they are no longer employable. But second, Chair, I want to know that the program, what is our program around the victim, how far are we, the victim offender program? Because I think we had raised here in the committee and also that what may be more important, the victim offender relations are very important in this regard. And then thirdly, I want to know the extent to which we involve the civil society organization in terms of these issues of parole, particularly churches, traditional leaders, and the traditional healers and so on, those that are related to this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Bongo. Honorable Mutapo.
For the presentation. Chairperson, I would like to inquire about when I read, I don't know whether, document on correctional supervision and parole. There were categories, there are categories of illnesses which are recognized as illnesses, but we have conditions and illnesses in terms of our tradition and culture, which I don't know in terms of the relevant section, because it goes further to say, and any other related illnesses. So do you sometimes take those into consideration? Like when a person is possessed, Malopo, because it can occur anyway. Do you know Malopo? Chairperson? Yes. Of a traditional nature, being possessed, isn't it? Spiritually. No, it's not demons. As soon as you say demons, you are saying something, you know? Mm. It's like say more in African law, you did it. You studied African law. Written by Seymo. He's saying Tatari Rupi. Ki shame washer. It's not a shame washer. Tatari Rupi, you know what is it? In terms of our culture, when my sister is married to a certain someone, and is unable to bear children, the younger sister will be married to bear children for the sister. So in Western language, they call that shame washer. That's why I'm afraid to say it's demons. No, being possessed by, you see. So are you also taking that into consideration in terms of legislation? Because it goes further to say and any other. Because I'm afraid here only both dementia, what, all those are mentioned, which we know in terms of legislation recognized illnesses. And again, special dispensation for political prisoners. I know Professor here will be very much delighted because the IFP, PAC are affected. How far? Because a task team was composed some years ago in terms of that, composing of members of various political parties. So how far is it? The special dispensation for political, so-called political prisoners. Again, I've seen Van Wyk, Life as Van Wyk, Van Vieren. There is a reduction in terms of number of years a lifer shall have served. But sometimes, I was discussing with my learned colleague here, Honorable Bongo, sometimes we don't take our community into confidence because they know where prisoner, offender XYZ was found guilty of murdering the neighbor. So now he's going to serve 25 years. Normally, when they know for life, yeah. They don't know this thing about 25 years. KG, ABC, who only knows. Then, in terms of this judgment, isn't it? And presidential remission. It has been reduced to 12 years, 4 months. Ne? Yes, 12 years, 4 months. Before being considered, you can be considered for parole, you must have served 12 years, 4 months. Yes. Now, you know, the community will now say, sometimes, that's what you see nowadays, ne? People are taking law unto themselves because they say, no, man, the system is no longer working. So it's better now we take law into ourselves. Maybe it's high time you... Do you normally have sort of outreach programs? Sorry, I must focus there. Outreach programs to sort of inform communities of all these processes which or protocols which you have as a DCS or NCCS. And another issue of family or victim involvement when you consider a parole ma. So, is it just a mere process of consulting with the victim or family? Or do you take that into consideration very seriously so when that is being applied, parole is being granted? And on page 27, consideration of offender, page 27 of the book, consideration of offenders who may, the Verse Justice Project. Normally, how do you deal with such a situation? No, it's this one. Not the presentation. How do you deal with such a situation where an offender still maintains, even after conviction, to say, I've never committed such an offense? Because one of the conditions of parole is that you should, one, should show remorse. Yes, but he or she keeps on maintaining, I never did it. So how do you deal with such a situation? And on page 33, task team to review parole system, how far is it? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mutapo. Honorable Mutseha.
You know, this whole area of social integration, which for me goes with the halfway houses, is always close to my heart, because that's one area where an impact has to be visible. Now, when I interact with the people who are involved in halfway houses, I get the impression that it's one of the business areas where the department will issue tenders and people will apply and win tenders. But winning that tender does not really mean that the people who win the tender have the capacity to deliver. I met one young lady who from Tembisa who told me that she won a tender to run a halfway house somewhere in Landeria. I know the young lady. She's very energetic. But the main consideration, according to her, why she won the tender is because she's prepared to live at the place and others are not available to live there. Now, I thought if that is the consideration, then we have a problem. Because in my view, halfway houses should actually be community projects. The community must buy in. Because in the community, you will have retired social workers, retired nurses, you will have doctors. You need all these services. Now, I wanted to suggest that maybe whilst we congratulate the department for having ensured that we renamed the halfway house in Johannesburg after the young lady in Hlahla who died during the local government processes, that maybe we need to have a workshop on this rehabilitation and social integration with specific reference to these halfway houses, to say what is the concept of halfway houses, how should the what services should halfway houses render, and how should they be run. Should they really be sent on tender by business people? He wins the tender and then he employs someone who will just do the administration and not really deliver the service that are required by the ex-offenders. So it's just a proposal that maybe we need a workshop to deal with the social reintegration. Also to access, are we making an impact? Because the number of children that are roaming the streets and giving problems to communities is increasing and not decreasing. Because we can't just be happy to say we are having rehabilitation programs. We have to find out whether those things are making any impact in society. Otherwise, we're wasting our time and our resources.
Thank you, Chairperson. And to the National Council, we said we are not engaging on your report. But what you could actually also take with is the concern around the implication of the Van Wyk judgment of reduction of sentence. Just adding on what Mam Thapo has actually also alluded to about the expectations of the communities in terms of the kind of sentences that are given by the court and what subsequently happens. And just looking at how it then continues to expose the same communities to some of the crimes. If you reduce sentences, because the gravity of the crime determines the sentence, but then we've got technical ways of actually ensuring that we counter almost that. And I think it's a matter that needs to be looked at closely, so that, you know, the whatever legislative framework we've got manages to have the correct intention, because you might find that it's just technicalities to look at how legislation is crafted, and then it actually then comes with a situation that just says we are lenient towards crime in a country that is grappling with so much crime. Let the council look at it so that they could be in the position to advise the minister accordingly, maybe coming up with ideas as to how we can reshape policy around issues of this nature. Because we are grappling with a situation of having in the country serial rapists, and the women's sector, if they see this 12 months, well, this 12 years, 4 months, for somebody who's been a serial rapist, they're not going to be happy with it. For murders, especially femicide, and then you come up with sentences of this nature. If people of South Africa, all of them, were actually in the position to articulate this, I mean, killing somebody would actually say to you, you can kill and then have to spend a few days in prison and then come back, nothing will happen to you. When on the other hand, you hear voices of South Africans who are tired of crime, saying bring back corporal punishment. And of course, because we are a democracy, we can't even think of going that way. But let there be harsher sentences, which we have always advocated for. But we shouldn't actually advocate for something, but in a manner in which we develop policy, it then counters
the intention. Thank you. We can have a 5 minute break and then come back for the responses. The chief.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we go back to business? Can we have the responses to the comments and questions by members?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I will start with the responses. And the colleagues will also cover those that I will not do. Chairperson, I think firstly, since we are coming from overcrowding, maybe just as a general comment, we can just ask the colleagues to put slide 50 on the screen there. Then I just want to say one or two things about slide 50. Jefferson, in terms of slide 50, I think what we also need to just remind ourselves the value that we have currently from community corrections, because prior to the establishment of community corrections, if we are looking there, parole was always there. We have 51,900 on parole. But then we have on probation, meaning that all those sections there gives you a number of 16,000. If you add those yellows, it's 16,640. Who, if this system was not available in South Africa, meaning that those people were potentially also behind bars, as well as a very important one is the blue one, the awaiting trial persons. There are currently 1,145 remand detainees who are under community corrections supervision system, meaning that also they were then supposed to be behind bars. So I'm just want to just flag this, Chairperson, that we can see that the things that the current government have put in place over a number of years are working, and it's demonstrated by the 16,600 as well as the 1,100. So if you add them up, you'll find that the policies approved by this portfolio committee over a number of years and legislation making sure that we currently having almost 18,000 people outside our facilities which were supposed to be inside. Chairperson, then a general comment on the legislation with regard to lifers. Chairperson, I think what is important for the portfolio committee is that prior to the current Correctional Services Act, which is applicable from 1 October 2004, we never had in legislation a minimum detention period for lifers. So by the assistance of this portfolio committee, that act was crafted and eventually promulgated by the president with effect from 1 October 2004. And that act is saying if you are serving life imprisonment, you need to serve at least 25 years. Meaning that what we are dealing now, Chairperson, with what we call the Van Vieren and Van Wyk judgment cases, are all cases still reliant on the old Act 8 of 1959. So therefore, this discrepancy and the court orders who dictate how do we need to determine the minimum sentencing period. Chairperson, that means that if you were sentenced to life on the 1st of October 2004, you have to serve 25 years before consideration. Currently, Chairperson, from the slides, I will just summarize. We have the Van Vieren sentence before 94, roughly 92 of them left. Now, they have already served 20 years and more. The challenge that we have is the Van Wyk judgment cases. Initially, it was just below 5,000. There's currently about 4,000, just over 4,000 left in the system. And they are benefiting from this interpretation of allocating maximum credits as well as the court rulings in this regard. So, Chairperson, I want to say that the past is unfortunately haunting us now, and we need now to explain what happened before 1 October 2004. So I think it's appropriate as advice that the NCCS need to take cognizance of what was said here, but also by noting that the current legislation is assisting and is very prescriptive in terms of those serving life sentences. Chairperson, in terms of the number of decisions of the review board, Chairperson, I think the presenters had said that there's really a small number, but I think it will be the best, Chairperson, not to speculate. We will go back and maybe provide cases referred to the Parole Review Board, the number of cases, as well as the decision taken by the review board, so that the portfolio committee can have that information and then take decisions on that, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of the expansion of criminal records, Chairperson, I think just on this matter, this function is with the Department of Justice and it's administratively managed by them. I can confirm to the Portfolio Committee that the Department of Correctional Services have provided our views and inputs to the Department of Justice and the review processes who are considering the expansion of criminal records. Chairperson, in terms of what we have established in the meantime on after the ex-offenders conference, I will ask DC Mvandaba just maybe to give us a snapshot, because that process is also assisting and facilitating ex-offenders to provide the necessary guidance to be, at the end of the day, citizens that are responsible and also working. Chairperson, the victim offender programs will be also addressed by my colleagues, as well as, Chairperson, the matter which was raised by Honourable Mamutapu about the other illnesses. Maybe I need to do this. Currently, Chairperson, there are 13 medical practitioners and specialists on this committee. Ubona Mamutapu una le batho ba 12 ba understandang le leme la hao. So nerka hola hore batla considera ntotsenu in those others. In short, Chairperson, for those who could not follow, I'll just freely summarize by saying that out of the 13 medical paroles advisory board practitioners, there are 12 that will clearly have an understanding of the concerns raised by the honorable member. And Chairperson, we don't have medical practitioners amongst us. That is an independent structure which consider all applications submitted to them. Chairperson, we as a department, we don't have a direct role in any of those applications. Safe to say that the current medical parole system, any person can apply for medical parole. In the old system, it was dependent on the medical staff in our facilities. Now, the offender can apply, the family can apply, attorney can apply. The only prerequisite would be, Chairperson, on that form, is that the offender need to give consent that his situation or his condition can be, consent that those in the structure, in terms of the medical advisory board, can have access to that personal health information, because we know in terms of the Health Act that information is normally confidential and you need consent for that. So, Chairperson, we as DCS, not any role. The only person that will play a role is the medical practitioner, or what they call the treating doctor, is also to express him or her on that form. Then it becomes a total process for the medical parole advisory board. Chairperson, in terms of confidence in from the community, we have a structure, and DC Mvandaba will maybe also just give a little bit more detail on what the community outreach is doing and their role. Chairperson, in terms of the victims, this is not a mere allowing them the opportunity to give inputs or to participate in the process. Chairperson, in terms of the policy, parole boards need to consider the inputs by all role players, including the victims. Chairperson, but now this is always a difficult one to say what weight are they placing on that. We have examples, Chairperson, in the consideration processes where the victims have expressed them and where clearly the parole boards have taken that on board and did not approve those placements on parole. Chair, but we need also to remind ourselves that the voice of the victim can also not ensure that offenders will never be released. So there's a fine balance that need to be found in this process, but Chairperson, they must consider that. Chairperson, the one of the Wits Justice Project where offenders maintain that they are not guilty. Chair, there was a slide or two where we have tried to explain the predicament that we in correctional services and parole boards have. We have a warrant of detention, and part of our function is to ensure that we execute the warrants that we are receiving from courts. And Chairperson, if that individual is not showing remorse is not the only consideration by the case management committee, as well as the parole board, as well as when the minister and the NCCS eventually consider possible placement. So it's a broader area, Chair, and it's not the only area for consideration. Chairperson, I will pause here, and maybe the other one, Chairperson, that I also need to respond to, Chairperson, is the from Honourable Mamtapu, is the special dispensation for political prisoners. Chairperson, this is a function that is managed by the Department of Justice. The Department of Correctional Services is playing a supportive role with regard to those on who applied for this special dispensation. We provide the information constantly to the Department of Justice. But Chairperson, what we are doing also, if these people who applied for the special dispensation are eligible for consideration on parole, parole boards are considering them, and we are placing them out on parole if they comply with all the requisites and requirements, and as and when there will be a pardon for them, then they will receive the pardon whilst on parole. So Chairperson, we don't keep them back, we continue to consider them. Chairperson, let me pause there and hand over to Ms. Mandaba Kokong and the other colleagues to close the other gaps. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CDC. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the progress made on the victim offender dialogue, Chairperson, since we have appointed the social auxiliary workers, whose main function is to ensure that they trace and prepare the victims for participation in the dialogue, and that they cannot do it alone. They will have to get the buy-in of the different structures within the community. And we do have Victim Empowerment Forum, who is led by the Department of Social Development, where all the structures that are dealing with the victims within the communities, your NPOs, your FBOs, your traditional leaders, your churches, there's quite a number of churches that came to us and partner with us to ensure that the program on the victim offender dialogue is a success. So whenever we are holding or hosting the victim offender testimony or dialogue, it has to be agreed by that forum and by that structure, which means that the whole community takes the total ownership of the victim offender dialogue. Just to name but one chairperson, that at Shayandima community last month in September, we had a huge victim offender dialogue where, you know, all the community structures, your churches, your traditional leaders, your business partners, they participated in that dialogue, which became a success. So we are seeing that those social auxiliary workers, they not only have victim offender dialogue sessions, they also conduct follow-ups with the specific direct and indirect victims and go back to the victim of empowerment structure to report back the progress of the victims that participated and that were prepared and traced. In terms of the outreach, we do have an outreach component within social reintegration whose main function is to ensure that and it is in our operational plan, whose main function is to ensure that they organize and hold imbizos within our communities to educate the communities about the agenda of corruption. whether it's a parole, whether it's employability, whether it's the conditions of the conditions of parole and the probationers. And because they also we also participate in the CBF, most of the time, in order for us to have an agenda of the Imbizo, we get the agenda from the concerns raised within the CPF. And chairpersons of the parole boards also, they do participate in those Imbizos. And they do have targets, the different management areas, they do have its targets in terms of their operational plan of how many Imbizos each management area needs to achieve in a particular financial year. But also, we also have an ambassador's program looking at after the ex-offender conference, because a number of those ex-offenders that attended and committed in that conference, one of the resolutions was that we must have ex-offender desk. So in the ex-offender desk, the very same ex-offenders, that some of them they do have businesses, some of them they do have NPOs. So they assist us in terms of identifying the ambassadors, and we take those ambassadors and we go to the different schools and to the youth programs where they educate the youth on the disadvantages of committing crime at their age. And we see that there's quite a number of schools that are inviting us to go and talk and do those ambassador talks that crime does not pay into their schools. And Chairperson, I think we do welcome the issue of the halfway house in terms of the workshop. I think it is necessary. What are the main functions of the halfway house? As a department, we have agreed that we cannot have another prison outside, and that will be in our community because we do have social reintegration. But what happens is that we partner with an NPO that is already existing. Now, our main requirement for the NPO is to ensure that, because this person, the reason why this person is released into a halfway house is because there was a lack of monitorable address as well as the support system, which is one of the requirements before the person is placed outside on parole. Now, we request then that the service, the NPO, should provide the support and definitely will be able to monitor this parolee in the address of the halfway house. But also, they need to start the reconstruction program with the family because everybody is coming from a family. And the NPO is to start the reconstruction reconstruct the relationship between the offender as well as and the family. And we found out that it can sometimes delay because some of the families they're so angry for these offenders and they do not want to see them coming into their families because they will say that they are going to disrupt the peace that we already had and we are stigmatized by the families. Therefore, that is why it takes a while for us to work with the family to reconstruct the relationship, which at the end we do and succeed. But I think, Chairperson, it is going to be pointed, and we welcome the suggestion of the Chairperson that we need to have a workshop in terms of that.
The Chairperson wants to make an interjection, just there.
I say I'm excited about what you say you did in Shayandima because I think that's the correct way of going about the matters. But I'm not trying to start the workshop as well. But you see, I think if you get an NGO, I would be happy if that NGO really runs the center. But you know, you could ensure that every halfway house has a stakeholder committee so that that's where you can bring your community leaders, you can bring your social workers, you can bring your doctors, nurses and so on, so that all the services that those people need are at hand. because there's no one NGO that would really have the competence to address the needs of that. But we can take that discussion further later, maybe at that workshop, and really develop a concept that can be rolled out to other parts of the country. But I think your work is commendable, and we thank you for that.
Are you done?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. All right. One thing that Commissioner Smallberg,
yes.
I'm curious about is how do you determine placement of remand detainees in community service? Who makes the final say?
Thank you, Chair. What will happen is that the court will requisition us that there's an intention of placing this person on bail, but this person cannot afford bail. Therefore, we need to go out and determine the suitability, whether we can be able to monitor this person while the person is on bail. So as community corrections, we do the same process that we do for the probationers. We do have a form that we go out there and monitor and confirm the address, because what is required by the court, whether while the person is on bail, will you be able to monitor the person and ensure that the person does attend the next court date? So what we do, we go out there and check whether we can be able to monitor this address, and then we come and then we check the person that is going to be the support or the caregiver to the person while is out on bail, and then we go back and present the report to the court that yes, we will be able to monitor this person, and on the next court date we'll be ensure that we inform the person.
It's fine, so it's done through the court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. I think this then brings us to the end of the business. Let me take the opportunity of thanking the department for coming to present before us. You have noted our concerns and the documentation that's supposed to be following, and the National Council also, we have actually made a special request. We're hoping to hear something from you in that regard. And that then brings us to the end of today's business. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, Chair.
Can the members remain? The chairperson wants to make an announcement. Oh, okay. Mam Tapu is reminding the department that you need to invite a member of the committee with the access card to have access into correctional centers.
No, they didn't tell us. We have to pay.
I'm done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, always a pleasure. That's a small beggar. What did they say? He forgot his recording. Let me see. Give it to CFO. Can't I just want
to? No, it's
PMG. Oh, PMG. I mean, yes. No, they're saying it's for PMG. Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Thank you. Bye. Over to you, Chairperson.
Welcome.